Welcome to Sestercast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm rewatching this series for the third time. My co-host, Kathy Campbell, is watching for the first time, and so we make sure not to spoil any storylines beyond the episode we are currently discussing. So, hey, Kathy, how's it going this week?
Hi, Jean. It's doing all right.
I'm glad to hear that. We've had a little bit of a pause in our recording schedule because we have been beset here in Oregon by pollen and all the lovely things that make us have runny noses and sore throats and
coughing and sinus stuff. So we decided to allow your ears to be less assaulted by horrible voices and wait until we got stuff cleared up a little bit better.
Yeah. That's right. So anyway, well, we are excited to finally get back together and discuss Orphan Black because it's really been too long. And this week we are discussing an episode called Transitory Sacrifices of Crisis, which is Orphan Black Season 3, Episode 2. And as we talked about last week, all the titles for the episodes this season come from a speech made by Dwight Eisenhower, President of the United States, his farewell address. And so I've been going back and looking at the context of the titles themselves and finding the sentence where they appear. And it's always pretty interesting. So I'm going to go ahead and read this sentence too.
Awesome.
And it's discussing basically the communist threat. After all, this is 1952, I believe. And he says, no, that's wrong. That's when he was elected. Sorry, history people, don't at me. Don't email me. I totally blew it. Yes, this would be 1960. To meet it successfully, there is called for not so much the emotional and transitory sacrifices of crisis, but rather those which enable us to carry forward steadily, surely, and without complaint, the burdens of a prolonged and complex struggle with liberty at stake. Dun, dun.
So cool.
It is. It's rather dramatic and inspiring, and certainly for our characters in Orphan Black, a prolonged and complex struggle is definitely what we are getting into, especially this season with a new clone showing up.
Right.
And speaking of new clones, in our episode 1 from season 3 discussion, so the last episode we recorded, we totally forgot to mention that there was a new Lita clone who appeared very briefly. And I noticed it watching this now, the fourth time, that I had not really paid attention before because it's real, real brief. And I wondered if Kathy had noticed, and it turns out she did. So I checked in with her and I thought, you know, we just want to mention that there was a new clone who was introduced very briefly. But you did notice that, Kathy, right?
Yeah, I did. It took a little bit of a, it was kind of a, is that a clone type of a moment when I first saw the footage, like on the security camera. And then later on in the episode, someone says something she didn't even know she was special or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so in my beginning notes for this episode, when we see one of the caster clones with a girl, my notes say, not a clone this time. So I was like, obviously I recognized it and mm-hmm. acknowledged it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why we didn't talk about it last week.
Yeah, but we didn't get to learn too much about her, but they did say her name, which is Crystal. And she certainly will appear for more than 3 seconds in this series. But I just wanted to point it out because I know that in my first viewing of Orphan Black, the fact that I had not recognized her. So she's in the elevator with one of the caster clones. And I think Delphine is showing Sarah on the on the surveillance footage they have. It's another Alita clone, and that's pretty exciting. And it will be fun when we get to meet her and learn more about her. But I know I was confused when that character, that clone, returned later in the season, and I was a little bit like, what is she talking about? It seems like they know about her already. What?
So. Yeah, I'm excited to see, because I didn't know that they that she'll come back in the next, like in the future. And so I thought it was kind of odd that they didn't really say anything about her.
Yeah.
That she just kind of existed and was there. I was like, well, that's odd. I thought maybe she, like, they killed her or something. And I was just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, well, I do think they say, apparently, the caster clone guys were about to throw her in a trunk and take her away. And so she came close to being abducted and probably killed. So that's something memorable, and we'll hold that thought until she shows up again. But I don't feel like it's a spoiler, because would they create a clone and only have her in the show for 2 seconds?
Well, they kind of did that with the girl that I can't remember, who was sick. Oh, she was only in that one episode.
Yeah, Katya Obringen.
Well, no, not Katya. The one that they had, that Cosima watched the videos of.
Oh, Jen Simmons, I think. Yes. Simmons, yeah. That's true. But we got to know her, you know. Like, we got to, and she moved the plot forward. Anyway, clones. It's so hard to keep track, but I hate to let a clone slip by. And so this week, we have a pretty straightforward organization of the plot. Of this episode, and we can once again tackle it clone by clone, which is good.
It makes it easier, for sure.
It definitely makes it easier. And as usual, we like to start with Allison and her latest hijinks.
Hijinks is the perfect word.
It's so fun to watch her. It's a great Allison and Donnie episode, because Allison is plotting and Donnie is being dragged along, and there's that results in a lot of funny moments and some of my favorite lines in this particular episode. But I think it's one of my favorite. It starts out, Allison's on the soccer field, you know, doing her soccer mom thing, and she says, "I could beat her like a French meringue."
Which of course made me want some meringue.
Yeah. And she's talking about Marcy Coates, who is running for school, the school board or whatever they call it exactly, for their community. And Marcy is obviously evil in the suburban sense of evil, because she's wanting to rejigger the school boundaries, and Allison's kids are going to get the short end of the stick, so she cannot stand for that. But Donnie is listening to this, you know, with horror, because he's just quit his job, and Allison doesn't work, and he's saying, like, we can't afford to run a campaign, you know?
Right.
We really need to, like, you know, buckle down and get you know, get our ducks in a row, but we can do it. Team Hendrix, down but not out. And he puts up his fist for a fist bump and says, "Fist me." Allison is like, "What are you talking about? No, fist me." And he's like, she's just like, "Oh, he's so clueless."
Right.
But it's hysterical. Yeah,
it's so funny, because it just, their relationship just keeps changing, and it's so entertaining to see how they respond and talk to each other.
Mm-hmm. So then Ramon shows up, and we remember Ramon, Allison's drug dealer.
Slash weapons dealer, slash
bag boy at the local grocery store. And Ramon, you know, mentions, yeah, you know, this is most of my clients are soccer moms, but I'm giving up the business. I'm going to college. And Allison's like, oh, really? And he then, as he's walking away, Donnie's like, who is that? And Allison says, that is an opportunity. What did you think? I mean, it's the last thing I would have imagined Allison doing.
Oh, see, it so makes sense to me because, I mean, she's been in this world of drugs basically for a while now, you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And she's like most suburbanites, you're very aware of which of your neighbors probably are doing drugs. Mm-hmm. Especially if all you do is take care of the kids. Like, I would imagine you would be very aware. And Allison has the mindset of, I'll do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And being able to see that opportunity is just so perfect.
Yeah, I guess.
It was very Allison.
It was not where I thought they were going, you know. But it's awesome because it provides so much humor in this show and in this episode in particular. And we certainly do need the comic relief when we look at some of the other things going on.
Yeah. It kind of makes me sad that Allison and Donnie kind of are consistently the comic relief. Mm-hmm. But they are so funny that it ends up working out okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, certainly, if they weren't the comic relief, you wouldn't get some of the lines like we get in the next scene when Ramon comes to meet Allison and Donnie. And Donnie's trying to be all cool. He's like, sup? Gives him the...
Trying to show he could be a drug dealer.
bro handshaking him like, what?
Right. Don't doubt our stones.
Yes.
I mean, that was so funny.
Ramon says, what makes you think you have the stones for this business? And Allison's like, coolly, like, oh, you know, we have the stones. And Donnie's like, yeah. We have ample stones. That could
so
be a t-shirt
funny
for Donnie. Oh, and you know, one thing I neglected to mention at the beginning that I had noticed as I was watching this new season episode is that the credits for season 3 have been rejiggered, you know, the opening credits. So, of course, Tatiana's top billing. But now, instead of Dylan Bruce, who plays Paul, he was number 2 previously. Now he bumped down to number 3, and Jordan Guevara's is now number 2. So it, you know, Felix gets a higher billing than Paul, which makes sense. But
total sense.
Then they added Christian Brune and Ari Millen in after that. So that's Donnie and Mark and all the other caster clones. So they have, you know, opening credits billing. And Evelyn Brochu, who was Delphine, is not in the opening credits anymore. Or at least, you know, not now. And
right.
I think that's interesting. And I think Christian really deserves it. You know, after 2 seasons of playing Donnie and keeping our interest and making him so fun to watch. And
yeah.
And he is awesome in this show, in this episode.
Well, and he has so much more screen time. Mm-hmm. Not just, yes, his character is growing, blah, 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 but like he's actually influential in the plot.
Right.
Which makes a difference.
Yeah, so they finally meet up with Ramon in the parking lot. Ramon with his, you know, opening his trunk, showing off his inventory.
Stash.
And he says, well, this is worth $80,000 on the street, but my cost is $25,000 and... You know, but that's not including my goodwill. And Allison's so businesslike. You know, it's pretty cool to watch her make this deal when Donnie's the one who's been working in the business world all these years.
Right.
And Allison's like, $32K for the whole thing, firm. And Donnie's like,
what?
He's like, shouldn't we do this on consignment so we don't take all the risk up front? And, you know, Allison's like, nope. Donnie's like, I need to speak with my business partner.
Yeah, it shows a lot about like what Donnie did in the business world, because he obviously was not a high level executive. And so Allison comes in and is her, you know, organized, amazing self, and is just like, dude, I got this. Yeah. Hush.
Yeah. And she says, you know, this is for my campaign, too. This is not just for the money. This is for our kids, because
yeah,
I expect my clientele will be very loyal.
Yes.
And Donnie says, you little schemer.
I know. I love that. Like, this wasn't just a way for Allison to make money for the family. Like, she knows who Ramon's clientele are. Mm-hmm. She knows what they would do if, say, information was leaked about their hobbies, shall we say. And it would be very bad.
She is a schemer, but in the best sense of the word. And she's a mom schemer. She schemes for mom reasons. And that we like about Allison.
For sure.
So now I think we can move over to Cosima. And one of my second favorite lines in this episode is, we're at Felix's apartment. Scott is knocking on the door. Felix opens the door and he just looks him up and down like, and then he says, my God, you must be Scott.
That was so funny. It was so Felix and just perfect at, obviously. So Scott comes in and is just checking on Cosima, making sure she's feeling after all of the medical stuff that they've gone through. And she seems to be getting kind of better.
Yeah, right. And then they go to Dyad to meet with Dr. Nealon. I thought it was interesting how Scott said, like, you know, he doesn't trust Dr. Nealon, but he's, you know, 10 times the scientist that Dr. Leakey was, which doesn't surprise me.
No. Dr. Leakey wasn't there for science. He was the public relations / superstar type.
Yeah. So, I love the little bit in the beginning where they're sitting in office chairs, Scott and Cosima, and Cosima is spinning Scott's chair around. And he's just like, don't do that. I get motion sickness.
Yeah, that was really cute.
Yeah. Basically, Scott wants to know if the original genome is available. And Nealon says, no, everything... both the Castor and the Leda originals were destroyed by the Duncans when, you know, they set their lab on fire. And we don't know the original source of that genetic material. I think that's really it for science this week.
Yeah.
You know, what reminds me is we kind of have to add the Castors to the list of clones when we're going clone by clone, because I was going to say there's not that much science this week, but there is a whole thread with the Castors and being tested for their own, you know, genetic issues. Malfunction, which is different from the Leda's, but it's the equivalent, like somehow they messed up the genes, and the Castors have some kind of neurological problem, apparently.
Yeah, which looks horribly painful and extremely traumatizing.
Do you want to talk about the Castors now?
And, yeah.
Because, of course, there's that first
the first scene where it becomes an undesired threesome. Ugh, yeah. So I couldn't remember their names for a long time. Mm-hmm. Or I just didn't write them down. So most of my notes are Mustache Caster and Scar Caster. Like, that's what I call them. But I have my notes now. So Seth is Mustache, Rudy is Scar. Mm-hmm. And I can tell, like, Scar, gosh, not Scar.
It's the Lion King.
right? So Seth is, like, kind of the little brother.
Right.
And Rudy really wants to take care of him as best he can. Mm-hmm. They know that obviously something's wrong with their brains. And Seth is the best example of it.
Yeah.
But because it's neurological, it affects differently than like Cosima sickness. Whereas Seth reminds me more of Helena, in like the dynamic between the clones. Mm. Because Rudy wants to take care of Seth, make sure he has happy, sexy, fun times and eats and all of this stuff, very similar to Sarah and Helena's relationship.
That's interesting. And yeah, so Paul comes to the hotel room after we've had this scene of Rudy and Seth and the call girl, which is super creepy. Yeah. But very well produced, you have to admit.
Oh yeah, no, it was very well done.
So Paul's there, and he's their superior officer, and they, you know, they know that. Rudy is snide and, you know, kind of baiting Paul and making comments about Sarah, but Seth is looking at him like, oh, let's not stir the pot, you know, let's not.
Right.
We should do what he tells us. And Paul then gives both Rudy and then Seth this neurological test, which requires them to wear an eyepiece that tracks their eye movements and the dilation of their pupils. So while they answer questions that are logic questions, basically.
Right.
And it's very, feels very high tech and very science fiction-y, which it is. Although, I don't know. I mean, it's based on science. It's not complete fiction.
Right.
And
as much as science is like a lie detector test. Yeah. Is, but yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, I'm going to put in the show notes a link to a series of recaps, Orphan Black recaps, that appeared on the MarySue.com, which is, mm-hmm. you know, a pop culture website. But starting with season 3, they have two scientists who recap the episode and did specifically a science recap of each Orphan Black, starting with season 3, episode 1. And I did a search trying to find some more information about this test, and that was the first result that came up. So I highly recommend these science recaps, and it helped me a lot when I was watching the show for the first time to have scientists talk about exactly what is real and what's not in the episode. But yes, yeah, so they do this test, and Seth is having a hard time with it, and it's very troubling for Rudy because he knows that
what it means.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it, I don't know if it was just like my state of mind or whatnot, but it confused the heck out of me too. So like, I was just, so in the future when Helena gets it, I was like, okay, that is the type of answers that I would probably end up giving.
Oh yeah. Well,
but where are the mangoes?
don't spoil the episode.
Sorry.
I'm cutting that out. No. That kind of, you know, all doctors are rich, no fools are rich conclusion, no fools are doctors, true or false, that kind of those logic quizzes is what they ask while they're monitoring their brain activity, or at least their nervous reactions. Then Paul tells them, okay, you know, here's your extraction orders. You're going back to base, and, you know, gives them envelopes. And Rudy isn't too happy with this plan because he thinks they need to complete their mission, which is to get this genetic material for the casters that could potentially cure them. But
yeah, it's become more of a personal mission, mm-hmm. less of a this is what I'm told to do type of a mission. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of it makes you feel for the casters.
Yeah, you do feel for them. They're badly damaged in many ways.
Yes, and it's very not true.
Really their fault, but they are evil. Then later we see Seth and Rudy are on the phone because they're supposed to split up. Obviously, they can't travel together.
Right. So, I wonder if that is why Seth has a mustache.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
To really differentiate him.
Well, and for us as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's put it, yes, because they can't exactly just have different hair.
Right.
Makes it a little bit
that's true.
More difficult.
No, and they can't have glasses. Because they're supposed to be military killing machines.
Yeah.
So Rudy is talking to Seth and saying, look, I know you're glitching, brother, and we can't go back to base. And Seth is like, but we have orders. I don't know what to do. And Rudy says, we finished the job. And at that moment, he breaks into Felix's apartment. So yeah. We will... circle back to what happens in Felix's apartment, because that involves Sarah at the end. But, you know, there are other casters that are working with Helena. And Helena is being tortured, really, at this military location where she's being kept. You know, we can tell it's somewhere, some desert military base, and she's being waterboarded, I would say. And it's a stress test, apparently. It's not supposed to be torture. It's supposed to be medical.
Yeah, because they pour the water in the face over like a towel or something, so they have a hard time breathing. They can't see and whatnot. Then they like stop that and quickly pull blood and hair, I think, too, to just try and get, looks like, different levels of information. Who really knows what they're getting? But I think they're trying to figure out the differences between the caster and the Lita clones.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that, you know, with a this kind of experimentation, they might figure out something that could cure the casters. We saw last week, and we see again, like this, there's this woman doctor, you know, older woman, a smoker, a chain smoker practically. And she's seems to be the boss, and she comes in and tells them to stop because Helena is pregnant. Then she sits next to Helena and she introduces herself. I'm Dr. Virginia Cody, and I'm happy to meet you. And she's all like, you know, warm and welcoming.
Grandmotherly.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking to myself, like, if I didn't know how, you know, evil she could be, and I would feel very cozy with this lady with this manner, you know, she's...
I think that's why they showed her in the last episode, why they showed her like watching the video, because she was in the box and the doctor was like sitting there watching. And I think that's why they had that scene, so that you don't fall into the comfort of watching when Helena comes out. They don't want you to believe that.
Yeah. They want you to know that she's pretty cold-blooded. Next, we see the scene where Helena is getting this the test that Paul was giving to the casters with the eyepiece and the asking the questions. But the question is, all mangoes are gold. No gold is cheap. No mangoes are cheap. True or false? And there's a moment, you know, Helena's never going to answer these questions, no matter how they put them. And it's not because she can't, but she looks over at her scorpion pal. Pupuk is there, and Pupuk says, "We like mangoes."
Yeah.
And is walking around like, where are these mangoes?
I want mangoes. Yeah. Come on, mangoes. And the obsession with the mangoes is just really, really funny.
And so the doctor who's giving her the test says, like, "Do I have to repeat the question?" And that's when Helena says, like, "Where are these mangoes?"
Yeah.
"I would like to see these mangoes." That's definitely up there in favorite Helena lines, you know. "I'd like to see these mangoes." And she's getting a hard time from the caster guy who's there. But Dr. Cody comes in and interrupts again and takes Helena out over to the mess hall, which is always fun to watch Helena eat something.
Oh, yes.
And there's more of this, like, Cody laying it on thick, trying to win Helena over, saying, you know, "Your family sold you out. They think you're expendable, but you're not expendable to me or to my boys." And yes, I think she's going to continue to try to win Helena over, and it's going to be completely useless because that's not how Helena operates.
It's not how she works.
And just a footnote on the scorpion I forgot to mention last week, but the scorpion is real. It is not an animatronic scorpion. It is not CGI. It's an actual scorpion.
When you said that, I was like, wait, she's not hallucinating?
She's hallucinating.
But now I get what you mean.
But right.
That it's an actual scorpion when they were filming it. Yeah. That makes more sense.
Yeah. I just assumed until I read this article about the scorpion that it was, you know, some clever combination of a model and making the model move or whatever, you know.
A little robot or something.
But it's a real scorpion. And it's
probably cheaper that way, too.
Apparently acted well with Tatiana. They said the scorpion was one of the better, animal actors they'd worked with. What?
Okay. Which makes sense because they didn't really need the scorpion to do a whole lot other than just be a scorpion.
Yeah. And then I think that's the end of the Helena bits for this episode. And we could talk about Sarah now, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Sarah.
Oi. And Cal and Kira.
Yeah, which, did you like that opening scene with them?
Oh my goodness, my heart just like grew 12 sizes. They're such a cute little family, and I love how Cal takes care of Sarah, like, especially because it's not really something that she's used to, and the fact that he does it to her as well as to Kira, because like, it's one thing, it's easy enough to take care of your blood child. But all of the changes that Cal has made mentally to accept Sarah back into his life and all the things that he does, it just made me happy.
So Cal finds an apartment. He surprises Sarah and Kira with an apartment that he's found that he's going to move into and kind of hopes they will move into as well. And then there's this scene of them playing indoor hockey.
Yes.
With, you know, hockey sticks and tennis balls, as far as I could tell. And they're just having a grand time playing, and Kira's so happy. And I thought, even though this is real, it's not real.
Right.
This is almost Sarah's equivalent of Helena's dream last week, you know, that.
Yes.
You know, this is not going to last. There's no way they're going to settle down and be a family of three in a nice apartment and playing together happily.
Yeah, it's not going to last. No. I mean, first off, it would be a really boring way to end the the show.
The end.
Yeah. Especially in season three when we know that there's going to be two more seasons. Like, I like to imagine that for at least a little bit, a heartbeat, it'll work.
Yeah. Well, and of course it does get interrupted. Art calls Sarah and tells her about the two casters that they've gotten a report on, because the woman who was with Rudy and Seth, you know, comes to make a police report. They apparently took all her information down, wrote down all her like address and everything into a little notebook, and they took a sample of her hair, and you know, so it's, she's really freaked out. Like, she doesn't know what was going on. I mean, as soon as she realized there were two of them, she was freaked out. So Sarah wants to go talk to this woman because she wants to find out more about the casters, because she feels, you know, if she can follow the caster issues, they'll lead her to Helena. And Cal says, okay, go save your sister, after an appropriate amount of smooching, which was very, very lovely. So, and, you know, she does go to the precinct, and Art is talking to the woman, and Sarah shows up and asks her to give her the details as well. And she's pissing off Art because...
Well, yeah, because she's come into this whole Beth personality.
Right.
Like, she's like, dude, I'm Beth. Like...
Right.
I'm a cop, blah, blah, blah. And Art is just like, oh my gosh, I'm so over this.
I just got my job back.
Right.
Right. So that's when Sarah hears all the details about what happened with Rudy and Seth. And Art also mentions that they both have two-headed horse tattoos. That was one of the details that this woman, Patty, was able to share. Yeah, so then that leads Sarah to call Cosima and get science information and also mythological information. Yeah. and they talk about who Castor is, and we've talked about this before in a previous episode, and there is a link in the show notes for season 3, episode 1. But Sarah is asking, like, why did they take the hair? And Cosima says, of course, if there's a follicle, that's like a gold mine, you know, of DNA information.
Right.
And she's like, but this isn't helping me find Helena. Cosima says, well, I know the best option for you, but you're not going to like it. You know, have to go talk to Siobhan, and Siobhan can put you in touch with Paul. And Sarah's still pissed off at Siobhan over the whole business of selling out Helena. So...
Right. Like, there's major personal issues going on there. And we, earlier in the episode, we see Felix making tea for Mrs. S. And mm-hmm. so we see how beat up she really was. Like, and not just the physical toll that it took, mm-hmm. but like, the emotional toll, because you could just tell that Mrs. S is so heartbroken at the decision she made to try and protect her family. And she knows that Sarah is just furious at her, and she understands why Sarah is furious at her. So when Sarah arrives mm-hmm. and like Felix opens the door and they're just like interacting as brother and sister, and like Sarah is just not really having it for Mrs. S. Mm-hmm. Just like, doesn't want to put up with it. It's just like, no, you're still this terrible person that took my sister out of my life type of thing. Mm-hmm. But she so desperately still wants Sarah to be safe.
Right.
And wants Cal to get Kira away, and wants to just get them as safe as possible, but mm-hmm. she knows that Sarah can't leave either.
Yeah. And she is talking about her own experiences when she decided to leave London and take the kids, Felix and Sarah, you know, to North America. And she says, you don't fight in these conditions, you run, you know, and it's a very strong mother, you know, responsible moment that of course going to fall on not deaf ears, because it's not that Sarah doesn't care about Kira. She cares deeply, but she can't stop caring about Helena either. So
she's, yeah, it's Sarah. Well, and Sarah too is of the mindset that Kira is safe with Cal.
Mm-hmm.
While Helena doesn't have someone to keep her safe.
Right.
Yeah. And so in this situation, Helena is top priority for safety because Kira is already safe.
Yeah, that's true. There's a quick scene with Cal in his apartment where I was like, oh no, don't go outside of your house to figure out what a noise is.
Right. Like it really triggered the level of not necessarily lack of street smarts,
yeah,
but the different levels of them between Cal and pretty much everyone else. Like, that's, I think, true. Even Kira wouldn't have done that. Like, yeah. I mean, it just was like, really?
Yeah. So really? He steps outside, and as soon as he turns to go back in the house, there's Paul. And you knew right. It was going to be Paul. But it didn't take Paul's level of black ops man to get the drop on Cal.
No, it really didn't, because Cal was not the smartest in that situation, so, by far.
But basically the point of that scene is for Cal to tell, I'm sorry, it's for Paul to tell Cal that Sarah is in danger if she doesn't drop the whole caster thing, and settling down is a bad idea, and you need to get her out of there, out of here, you know?
Right.
So that's,
well, and Paul cares for Sarah.
Yeah.
Like, he really cares what happens to her and to Kira and the full thing. And and it was so funny. I made a note that I feel like Paul's voice is becoming more and more like Batman, more and more like Christian Bale's Batman. He just gets deeper and gravelly, and it's just like, rah, rah, rah. And I don't know if it's because like he started smoking or just hanging out with the casters now, or if he was just trying to pretend to be the big bad baddie guy in front of Cal to prove, like, I don't know, his manliness in front of Sarah's other lover or something. I don't know, but it was just very, I was very aware of his voice, different from the beginning of the series.
Yeah. And also, it doesn't hurt that he has like massive stubble. And
oh, no, he's
not clean cut the way he was in the beginning.
Yes. He's turned into a very different type of personality.
Yeah. No, that's true. All right. So here we have it set up. There is Cal, who thinks, okay, I gotta get Sarah out of here. Rudy in Felix's apartment. And now we see Sarah and Kira going to Felix's apartment to, you know, it's the end of the day that, you know, they've had such fun with Cal, and Kira asks if we're going to live with Cal.
Right, which was so cute.
It was super cute. And Sarah says, how do you feel about that? And Kira says, I want to. And then Kira says, can we sleep in the fort? So they have a big fort, you know, pillow fort in Felix's apartment. I'm thinking, as I'm watching it, I'm like, what is Kathy doing right now? Yeah. Because we know that Rudy is there.
Right.
We know when Sarah says, okay, I'm going to run a bath because you have to take a bath before bed. And, you know, goes into Felix's bathroom, leaving Kira alone in the living room, that it's going to be scary.
This is not going to be a good thing.
Yeah. And that moment when she opens up the fort and sees Rudy with the X's on his eyes. He's like, used some kind of makeup to put X's over his eyeballs. Not his eyeballs, but his eyelids. And It's like, that's out of any horror movie. It really freaked me.
Yeah.
Right.
I felt so bad for Kira.
Yeah.
Well, and obviously Sarah too, because here's her baby with this creepy dude who she knows how mean they are.
Yeah.
She's aware that they are not nice people.
And Kira is totally scared. I mean, as she should be. I mean, sometimes Kira's braver than you expect a girl that age to be, but in this particular scene, she's really, you know, crying, and Sarah has to say, like, don't cry, everything's gonna be okay.
Right.
But, you know, it's pretty hard for Sarah to sell that herself, because
yeah,
there's Rudy with a gun to her kid's head, and he just wants Dr. Duncan's formulas and the castor tissue samples that he thinks Duncan had. And meanwhile, Cal is on his way, because he tried to call first and nobody picked up the phone, as they yep. do in these situations.
Well, especially because Sarah was drawing a bath.
Right. And as he's coming up the stairs, there's Seth, and who stops him and, you know, sort of acts like he's a panhandler. But Cal sees the tattoo on his wrist and he realizes what's going on, and they start to fight, but Seth is really glitching now, and Cal doesn't even end up doing anything, you know, hitting him with anything. He just basically falls down, like he's broken. He's almost like a robot that's like had a short circuit.
Yeah.
So
I felt really bad for him, because it obviously was painful.
Mm-hmm.
And Cal, with his not street smarts, yeah. doesn't really know what to do.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised by that too. You know, with Cal, you think with all the other trappings that they gave that character, you know, like infinite money, infinite computer skills.
But right.
I guess he had to trade off for no, you know, he didn't get any karate lessons or whatever.
Right. But even like Seth is on the floor, like,
yeah,
spasming. Why doesn't he step over him and go up right. to save his girls? Like, really? You're just going to stand there and stare at him?
Right.
I yeah.
He doesn't. He's frozen. He didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
But Rudy hears Seth screaming, and so he does go downstairs and sees Seth, you know, completely gone. And it's a good scene, you know, the way they is set up, because you're expecting Rudy to shoot Cal.
Right.
And instead he just points the gun and shoots Seth twice.
Yeah, which, like, you know, it was going to be hard.
Yeah.
It was emotional.
It was.
And I was, the level of sympathy that I had for Rudy during that mm-hmm. was larger than I was expecting.
Right.
Because again, Rudy's job was to take care of Seth.
It was really touching the way he comforts him in his dying moment, you know, and tells him that he loves him and, you know, it's going to be okay. And you just don't expect that from your villains. So to be quite so touching.
Right.
But they're an unusual kind of villain, as we've discussed it already, that it's not really their fault the way they are, and they can't be good, you know, or they can't, I mean, Rudy's can be worse than others, but they're right. messed up. They are messed up. Anyway, and he runs off without shooting Cal, which we're fully expecting to happen still.
Right.
That was definitely one of the scarier Orphan Black moments ever. And in response to this, Sarah, the next scene you see Sarah at Mrs. S's house packing up Kira, to go to Iceland with Cal. And that seems like a really good idea about now.
Yeah.
For Kira and for Cal.
and for Sarah, too, to be honest, yeah. Because she couldn't do what she needed to do because Kira was in danger.
Yeah.
Like, it was the perfect incentive to get Kira out of the situation.
Yeah.
To be safe. Yeah. And it's exactly what Paul wanted.
Right. And Sarah mentions that, you know, her next step is going to be to find Mark, the caster that they already know. And hopefully he can help her get to Helena and end this whole situation. And so we get the last little scene. It's little, but it's, you know, if you thought you were going to be relaxing at the end of this show, it's a motel. Mark and Gracie are at a motel. Gracie is in bed alone. She wakes up. Mark's in the bathroom and he tells her to go back to bed. You know, he's locked himself in the bathroom and he's doing something. And it was, he puts a wet washcloth in his mouth and then he pulls out a blowtorch. Which is like, you happen to have a blowtorch, but okay.
Right.
And then...
doesn't everybody?
I'm like, I'm never having a blowtorch. I never want to have one. Anyone, anywhere near me, especially seeing this scene where he takes the blowtorch and he burns off his tattoo. And it is not, it's not implied. It's quite graphic. And
oh, yes.
And I clearly put it out of my mind because Kathy texts me, you know, like a day that she's watched this episode and I'd watched it a few days ago. And she's like, that ending. And I'm like, what?
What?
You know, I'm like, I go to look at my notes. I'm like, oh, yeah, blowtorch.
Yeah.
I had definitely put it out of my mind. So,
yeah, I am okay blocking that out of my brain.
Apparently, maybe there's like a higher threshold for pain in the caster line. Yeah, so I guess we wrap this up. Wow. It was a lot in this episode, as usual. I feel like I say that all the time, but I mean it. So anyway, yeah, Kathy, why don't you let people know where they can find us?
Yeah, you can find us online. We are at sestercast.com. Part of the fantastic Incomparable Network. You can find us on Twitter at Sestercast. Jean is at MacGenie and I am at Mrs. Soup. We would love it if you could leave us a rating on iTunes or a review as well. We'd love to have other Orphan Black fans be able to find our podcast. And we hoped you really enjoyed this episode and we will talk to you later.